Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And happy 4th of July, everyone. Or Independence Day.
Happy 3rd.
We'll call the meeting to order. Roll call. Trustee Harris, not here yet. Trustee Genrich,
here.
Trustee Atwood,
here.
President Rafter, here. Trustee Dart,
here.
Trustee Green,
here.
Trustee Sampson,
here.
All present in the calendar for. Is there a motion to modify or adopt the agenda? Hello, Trustee Harris.
Move to adopt as presented.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Trustee Dart. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Announcements. On July 12th at 4:30 p.m. here in Village Hall, there will be a joint review board meeting that is open to the public. The purpose of the meeting is an annual report for TID number 1. Copies of the annual report are available at Village Hall. 4th of July, a day of celebration at Heritage Hill Historical State Park from 10 to 4:30. There's information on Heritage Hill's website, but it's a reduced retro admission fee of $2. There is a ribbon cutting at 11 a.m. to dedicate the grand opening of Fort Dahlin, the new Children's Interactive Learning Center. And children are encouraged to decorate their bikes for a parade that will be at noon. The first 500 kids who participate in the bicycle parade will receive a bicycle helmet from Baycare Clinic. Music will be provided by the Green Bay Pickers from 1 to 4, and Zesties will be there for you to purchase custard. On Friday, July 13th, at Green Oil Park Baseball Diamond, there will be a movie in the park. This is the second, I believe, this year. And the movie will be Ferdinand. Activities start at 7 p.m. Movie starts at dusk. Bring your family and friends out. Have some fun. And for those of you who missed it, this past Tuesday, we had a presentation here at Village Hall on the vision for conceptual plan for what the prison property could become. It was very well attended, and if you'd like to see that presentation, it's on the Village website. Are there any other announcements from the board? Any announcements from staff? Hearing none, we will move on to number 4, public appearances. Is there anyone in the audience this evening who would like to speak on something that is not on this evening's agenda? Becky.
I'm Becky Nyberg. I live at 214 Seminette Street. And the main reason I'm here is for number 17 on the agenda, but there is something related to that I thought should come during the public appearance time. I was concerned about an intersection, and I wanted to bring it up at the Public Works Committee meeting, but then I noticed that there's no public appearances at the Public Works Committee meeting. And so I just kind of wondered why there isn't a time at the Public Works Committee meeting for people to come and talk about specific items because it's not there. And I'm also on the Planning Commission, and at that meeting, somebody was talking about how the park committee was looking at bike lanes and stuff, and I was confused. And so I inquired as to why the planning why the public works committee wasn't looking at it. It was because there's no public comment period for somebody to bring it to them, so they brought it to the park committee instead. So I think it's important that the public works committee should have. And before we came tonight, I got the the announcements for the next Public Works Committee meeting, and there is no public open comment at it. And I'm also concerned, too, that the Public Works Committee only has 5 members, and all the other committees have 7 members, and that is the committee that has the most, the biggest part of the village's budget to look at, has a lot of responsibility, and I just wondered why there's only a 5-member committee when all the other committees have 7 members. And so I just thought I would bring those comments at this time and save my comments for number 17 when it comes up.
Thank you very much, Becky. Okay. Thanks for those words. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Aylwin Bike Bed Committee. You have a closed meeting later on tonight on the pump house, and the pump house shows up twice on here. I would like to encourage all meetings on the pump house and all meetings, whenever possible, by the village board to be held in public. If they're for competitive reasons, I don't think that the village is competing with each other. The village really should encourage competition between developers and bidders, and there's no reason to have closed meetings when you really just want to do the best for the village and open it up to everybody. So if you did want to see what the actual pump house, the LA pump house, looks like as of last week, there is a website called LAPumphouse.com. It has a 3D floor plan with pictures and with everything that you can look at, even in your closed meetings. You can look at it on your cell phone or on a computer. So go to LAPumphouse.com, and you can see exactly what the building looks like, and it should not be demolished. It just needs a new roof over the garage, and it needs to be scrubbed down, but it doesn't need to be demolished. It shouldn't cost $40,000 or $50,000. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak on something that's not on this evening's agenda? Hearing none, we will move on to action item number 5 under old business, action regarding condemned pump house on Green Avenue.
What's up, Kevin? So, just to give you an update of where I'm at, it seems like the roofers are quick to respond, not the demo people. So I've got a couple quotes or estimates from a couple different roofing contractors, and they range anywhere from $25,000 to $50,000. I also spoke with the state building inspector. He said that we would have to get state review because it is more of a commercial building use than it was residential, so it would have to go through state review for the structure repair. As far as the demo contractors, I spoke with one this morning, and he said he could give me the estimate back beginning next week. And the other one hasn't responded back to me, so I'm kind of just waiting on hearing from them.
Okay, what's the state review process?
The state review process entails having an architect, designer, and engineer go through the building and design that roof structure system. And once they design that, they would submit it to the state for plan review. And from there, the state would either give recommendations on how to make it better, or they would just stamp it and approve it, and that's the way it should be installed. So something like that would probably range between $100 and $500 for the review process.
And the $25,000 to $50,000, that's to restore it?
Restore the roof.
As identified by the historic.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions for Kevin?
Yeah, that price doesn't include the architect's fees, you know, for the design of the system. That's just to rebuild the structure.
Okay, what would you estimate the architect fees to be?
I'm not really an architect, but I would guess anywhere between $500 and $1,500.
Okay. Okay, this is under action, but I don't know that we have enough information to take action, and we're considering a proposal later tonight, so.
Can I speak?
We have a request from the floor to suspend the rules. Do I have a motion for that? Trustee Dart, seconded by Trustee Green. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. There is a offer that's been on the table negotiating for last month that somebody will take it as is and fix the roof. I think that the roof can be fixed for less than that, but the village did request to see a available funds letter of $150,000, so the village has received an available funds letter of $480,000, so that the person who wants to do that is available to take the property as is. Thanks.
Thank you. I'll accept the motion to pick up the rules. Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Dart. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Mr. Lang, did you have something to say?
That's part of the negotiations.
Right. Okay. Well, we don't have enough information, so I would just make a motion to postpone any discussion on this until later.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Action item number 6, action regarding amendment to listing contract for parcels AL-44, AL-44-1, and AL-45. For those of you who don't know what those parcels are, it's the old Village Hall property. We have a contract with a realtor, Mr. James Wheeler, and that contract is up, and we're being asked to renew for another 6 months. So do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Sampson. Motion to approve?
Yes.
Okay. I have a second. Trustee Harris. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Action regarding Resolution 2018-10, designating public depositories and authorizing withdrawal of Village of Alloway monies. By state statute, we need to identify those financial institutions where the village will or could deposit its monies. Staff goes through and looks at the different rates that are currently there and looks for the more favorable rates, say on CDs and that sort of thing, and recommends a list of facilities. We have that before us. We have it up there. And we're also going to change, instead of having the person who has to sign for it name by name, we're going to do it by title, so it'll be village clerk and village president who needs to sign that. We'll also be taking out, be it further resolved, that a certified copy of this resolution shall be delivered to each of the above-named depositories, and said depositories may rely on this resolution until changed by lawful resolution. And a certified copy of such resolution has been given to the cashier of the respective named depositories. Do I have a motion on this item?
So move.
Trustee Genrich, seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion?
Quick question.
Yes.
I just wondered why we were removing Chase and Wells Fargo. If those are...
The rates were not that favorable.
Okay.
And we can always add them in the future, but right now the ones that are on there are the best.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, we have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Action regarding number 8. Action regarding ordinance 2018-09, repealing and recreating Article 1, Solid Waste of Chapter 432, Waste Management. Sean's going to take this one?
Yeah. Mike is not here tonight, so I'll take a stab at this. We just recently met Debbie, Jim, the street foreman, and Mike and I met, and we had reviewed this ordinance. The goal to clean it up and remove language that is no longer applicable to this ordinance. And I don't know if you want to go through all of this, or I can touch on some of the major points.
You can touch on the major points.
Okay. One thing to note that major appliances are no longer collected by the village. They can be dropped off at the LeBron Waste Disposal Site for a fee.
Fee for electronics, right?
A fee for electronics, thank you. Yep. So if you go, if you look at the third page under major appliances, we just discussed that. Electronics have been defined as a major appliance, and they can be dropped off for a fee. Our yard waste, we don't collect grass clippings, but grass clippings can be disposed of at the LeBron Waste Disposal Site. Again, at the bottom of that page, sixth page, major appliances are no longer picked up by the village. Let's see here. Storage of waste between collections. We had previously talked about where containers should be placed. They should be placed in an area completely screened from public view.
We're just recommending now to stop taking major appliances, right?
No.
We haven't taken it for a while. So the main purpose of going through this initially was for the screening of the garbage cans, right?
That was already approved at a previous meeting, but it was brought back again for the dog droppings,
waste.
I believe.
The dog waste, because previously, obviously, the ordinance read you could not put it in your garbage container, but now it's not an issue anymore. So as long as people dump the bag, it's not a big deal. And then I think the other aspect was just some of the language that was in there. You know, the major appliances, we haven't been picking them up for quite some time, but that ordinance hasn't been changed. So.
Okay. Very good. Are there any questions for Sean?
Do I have a motion? Cleaning up of language looks good.
Yep.
I would move to approve.
Thank you.
Do I have a second?
Seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action number nine, schedule a public hearing for a petition from SKB Terrace LLC requesting conditional use permit approval for residential and office mixed-use parcels on AL-125-7 and AL-125-8 located at 3241 and 3245 Riverside Drive. It's also the vacant property just south of Comapasas. On Riverside Drive down the south end of town, currently owned by the village. Do I have a motion on this item?
I'd move to approve.
Thank you.
Second.
Seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion? When do we want to schedule this? For August 7th? Can you add that to your motion? Because that's when you want it, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Good with me. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Public hearing scheduled. Action item number 10, action regarding schedule of public hearing for petition from Clarence Edwards requesting conditional use permit approval for the residential and cafe mixed use on parcel AL-920 located at 1253 South Irwin Avenue. It's the property at the corner of McCormick Street and Irwin Avenue. This comes to us from the Plan Commission in 625. They're being asked to schedule a public hearing on August 7th as well for this. Do I have a motion for this item?
I move to approve.
Trustee Dart, seconded by Trustee Genrick. Any discussion?
I just, this piece of property came up one other time for the same purpose. So we went through that all there, so I think it's a good use for it.
Is this the current owner of the property? Last time it was a tenant.
Same person.
Okay.
But he's going to be running it. But he's still the same owner.
Okay. Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Action item number 11, action regarding scheduled public hearing for amendment to Chapter 475 of the Village Ordinances from Planning Commission 625. Article 1, authority, purpose, and interpretation. Article 2, general provisions. Do I have a motion on this item? This is regarding the use of properties as homeless shelter, temporary homeless shelters. Trustee Green.
Move to schedule.
Second.
And seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? Trustee Harris.
Just one question I don't know if we need to consider or not, or if it would be part of the approval process when a applicant comes through. Do we need to take in the density into account of how many people within X amount of space, or just take care of that during each request?
I know what they have.
I don't know if we need to spell it out or not, that's all.
I think it was.
In the presentation, last time it seemed like it was spelled out, but I couldn't find where it was.
So with your discussions with Micah, guys, number of people staying at the shelters come up?
I thought I saw 20 in here someplace.
We have discussed that internally as well with Micah, and I think that would be determined per location. We did have something added in here from the fire department that wasn't in the Plan Commission, and that was, I think, item number 13 on the second page.
Estimated number of residents of each night. Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
So that we at least have an idea of how many residents they expect each day. For Micah, from what we've heard from Micah Center, it varies on any given night, but the fire department and building inspector will be going through and I think determining the maximum number per location.
Okay. Whatever we need to do to make it work, I just didn't know if we need to spell that out. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No,
what are churches zoned as right now?
Religious.
They're zoned as an assembly, at least according to a commercial building code.
So we don't call that out in the districts that are established? Or does that fall under?
A residential allows churches, schools,
okay,
daycares.
Okay. And then it says that the village board shall be notified at the next meeting. Is that the next meeting after approval is had, after the application, after
days.
They had the...
I believe as soon as we're notified, we can let the board know.
The next village board meeting. Okay. I'm just wondering for
clarification. Or even email prior.
Yeah, I would just say clarify it. And, I mean, all the people, everyone knows what's going to be happening. DEO, the fire, building inspector.
Yeah, kind of like when we sat down with them, we kind of let them know the sooner the better.
So is there a period of time prior to the churches hosting shelters that they have to inform the village?
We didn't technically set a deadline. We just informed them that as soon as they knew that they would use a facility, that they would inform us, and then that's when we would do our inspections and start the permitting process.
Okay. You might want to consider just... So you're not getting all the requests at the very end. Some kind of, and I don't know, you can ask them how... They plan this out very well, right?
Yes. So right, well... From digging into this further, I believe all these churches were signed up well before the beginning of summer.
Right. So. And right now it's just the two churches, Res and St. Matt's.
Here in Illinois.
And a 14-day limit on each per year, correct?
Right.
And more yes. About temporary.
Yep.
Great.
Just a thought, you know, as last week or whenever it was when we had the heat wave come through and we've got another one coming pretty close to what we just had, I think gives a little flexibility for them to become an emergency shelter as well, because we don't want to, if it can be offered up, I think it should be.
Yep. As long as people can be safe. But we may want to consider adding that to this as well. Just so there aren't any questions. Okay, so we are looking for our third, I believe, public hearing to be scheduled for August 7th. Do I have a motion on this item? Pardon?
We do.
Oh, we do already. A motion?
And a second.
And a second. Mm-hmm. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 12, regarding water authority agreement. Sean.
We were just recently notified that the Central Brown County Water Authority is proposing to amend the formation agreement. And I know that Trustee Sampson just recently met with Dave, the former water manager for the authority, and he got some clarifications on the changes, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, but in summary, the changes were made to allow a new member to easily join the authority, if you're interested in learning more about the details of this amendment, I would encourage you to attend the July 10th special board meeting at the Village of Howard.
And when is that?
I believe it's at 10 o'clock on July 10th.
Okay.
So do they have a interested party? Or just want to make sure that if they ever do, it'll be easier to get in? Don't know.
I don't think they have an interested party. It would just allow somebody to easily join.
They may, but because they're working off the 1998, which was even before the pipeline was built and it got down to the current six, it really is pretty prohibitive and not very attractive. So this might be an interested party that they've had talks with before. And what these changes do, and it basically, I don't know if you were involved in this. You were aware last year that it was in the works, but I think it's basically the Water Commission lawyer and manager handled these changes. And some of it was just cleaning up language because they've had three different, they've got an agreement, a contract with Manitowoc, they've got a purchase agreement with each of the six, and then they've got, and so it's to get the language consistent, but it's also to give them the flexibility to have different classes of members and different rules. It would, you know, on the plus side for us, it would protect us from a hostile takeover, that a couple new members could come in and vote on something that would affect our original debt that they had no part in entering, like entering that contract. And also it would give you the flexibility, you know, numbers that I've been hearing is if we're paying, let's say we're paying $4.90 or something for a certain quantity of water, there's water available from other providers that's half that. And what this would do is give the utility the ability to offer a new customer much less, although you would lock them in for 20 years or some extended period of time. So right now they would be less than Alloway, but as the, you know, as the bonding, you know, our rates should go down and theirs will stay steady. So after a period of time, it crosses over to be advantageous to us. And this, the changes would set up the ability to do those tiers or differential right now, which doesn't exist. So there's that meeting next week, and then the full board that I'm on now will vote on this at the regular July meeting, which is at the end. But it doesn't commit us to it builds a framework that allows us to be flexible. But any agreement, like changing rates or adding a new customer, then that's a political thing, and then that would come back. You know, they would do full dog and pony shows and get all of our buy-in on that. So, this change is something that the board can really approve with input represented by our people.
And they've been working on this for about 2 years, changing the language, because we had some other municipalities approach the Water Authority that the language was so onerous, and you did a great job of relating how the changes go. It was so onerous they couldn't get in. It didn't make any financial sense, whereas we've got all this water supply and having more customers makes financial sense, but it was, you did a great job on how to protect the original six with our debt investment and still be able to bring others in. So the way the original agreement stood, it didn't make any sense for anybody else to join us. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, this.
Okay. Therefore, do I have a motion on this item?
Do I need a motion?
Yeah. Oh, it's a report? No, it's an action.
Do we need a? No.
I don't think so. No.
I don't think there's any required.
Really?
I put it on there, and Sean was going to check and see what the status was of it.
Well, I was wondering, do we need to refer to this to our attorney?
I was just going to ask that. Has Randy reviewed this?
No.
I would recommend we do so.
Okay.
And before, I would say that meeting is Wednesday the 23rd, where our people, I think I would have a vote. You may also have a vote. We'll be asked to vote on this, so if we could hear from Randy Gass before the 23rd.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion to refer this to council. Do I have a second?
Second.
Trustee Dart, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 13, action regarding League of Wisconsin Municipalities is requesting a $1,200 contribution for a campaign to keep the Dart store and Walgreens tax shift in front of the candidates for the governorship and legislature this year. Brad, do you want to talk about this?
Yes. when I received this, obviously it's a request for some funding, so therefore it needs to be approved by the board if you choose to do so. But what I did is I reached out to the other communities in the Greater Green Bay area to see what everyone is doing. Ashwaubenon is the only one that has taken any sort of action at this point, and they're recommending or they've approved $2,000 for contribution. The other communities will be taking it to their various boards throughout the month of July. So it's something that if you want to wait and push back to the second meeting, that should be just fine, or even the first meeting in August, just to kind of get a better sense of what the other communities are doing. One might ask, you know, how does it affect us? We have the dark store. We have one of the banks is looking for a change in their assessment.
But is that based on the dark store? They're just
yes
saying
and no.
Okay.
And it's probably about as far as we can kind of go with that at this point. But could there be others? You know, we don't have the big box stores, which are typical, but we do have a CVS. Walgreens is one of them that has really pushed for the change in assessments. So this is a crossover between the dark stores and Walgreens. So I guess my recommendation to the board would be to not take action tonight, but yet wait to see what some of the other communities are doing. Certainly don't want to put ourselves in a position that's maybe we're quick and find that it's just two communities that are supporting this. But in the same token, to look at a little bit more what does the league offer to the village. And legal advice they do provide at no cost. We can ask various questions, legal questions from them, and they do respond. They do training for municipalities. And right now what they're really working on is the how shared revenues and expenditure restraints affect communities. And they've been working on that this past year by going around the state, holding various town hall meetings to gather as much information as they can. And then we'll be making a strong recommendation to our state legislators in the near future on how that should be changed.
Okay.
I have a question. Is this something that's a court? Is there a court case pending that people are hanging back on? I'm wondering, does the legislature have something pending, or is there a court case out there where everybody's kind of hanging back to see that it's going to be clarified?
There's been a lot of challenges. I would say Oshkosh or Appleton have been very aggressive. Howard and Nashwabanon this past year, I should say 2017, when the dark stores was before the legislators, and it got close to the floor, and trying to get some changes in that, so to protect the general taxpayer, because what's happening is that shift is going from that assessed value is being removed, and then the burden is placed upon all the taxpayers, and that's where the major problem lies. And I think it was Ashwaubenon was anticipating their tax rate was going to just skyrocket with all the potential dark stores that they could be facing.
So there may be local court cases out there.
Correct.
But it's still very much in the legislature's ballpark to do something.
Correct.
I guess I was thinking that everybody was on hold because maybe the state Supreme Court was going to make a ruling, but no, it's not. Yeah. Something that fights out on a local level, and and if it does go to the Supreme Court, they might kick it to the, they might confirm that this is the legislature's choice, and in which case, any money invested here arguably is a could be a good thing. Okay, thank you.
And the big question is a building, property, whatever, taxed as a going concern, or as an empty building like Menards and Ashwaubenon, what it was worth when it was operating versus what it's worth today? That's the bone of contention, isn't it?
That's one of the
major
contentions, correct.
Okay. Do we have a trustee Harris?
I was just wondering if there was one other thing we could do in the meantime while we're, whether it's the next meeting or the first meeting in August. Brad listed out a handful of things that the League of Municipalities does throughout the state, but I was thinking back about different things where the village has gone to the league asking for some assistance. And maybe we can look at the last half dozen things that we've asked about, asked for assistance with, and I'm curious what kind of responses we've gotten. The things that come to mind when we lost, in a sense, home rule on cell towers. Last year, I think we tried to get them involved with the GBCI concept of seeing if it makes sense to close the prison. And then I think 2 years ago, we were looking for assistance in trying to come up with a statewide rule, guidance, policy, for lack of better words, with on sex offenders. And I don't know, I don't remember exactly how we got responses, and I'd be interested in seeing where they've helped specifically the village.
The sex offender was one that was right on the cusp of them putting together what their legislative agenda was going to be, and I'd asked that that be one of their issues that they would take up, and there was no interest at that time to put that on their agenda, so it was something that, you know, we were left to kind of fend for ourselves once again without having an ownership or a support mechanism throughout the state.
And they're asking for a flat $1,200 from all municipalities regardless of size.
Correct.
They're suggesting
a minimum of 12.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, people that don't really have big box stores is 12 bucks.
Yeah. Okay. Does anyone want to make a motion on this item? Trustee Genrich?
I move to table for future input and a decision to be made later on.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Trustee Sampson, any discussion? I agree. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 14. We'll take A through D as one, consent agenda. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Harris?
Move to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Dart? Any discussion? All those
just
in favor?
Just for the record. Shelby Atwood is no relation to me, so I will be voting. So I have no idea who that individual is.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 15, report from Monica Hoff, Animal Control Officer, regarding Code 151, animals. Welcome, Monica.
Hi. Thank you.
Could you give Monica? Thank you.
Yeah. So, well, Brad asked me to come in. So I guess I'm here because there's been some concerns, there's some questions about our code, animal code, that came up previously, and specifically the leash law, I think, is what I'm looking at. 151-.
Trustee Atwood, do you want to?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, it was mainly. Without looking at it, I've got it right here, but nuisance, 151.9, animals leaving, their pets leaving their yard.
Right.
And I had recommended that an underground fence, if owner had an underground fence to post it on an interior lot with two signs and on a corner lot with three, so that pedestrians walking or bikers walking were at least aware of the fact that there was some protection of an animal approaching them. Fences are good, but I can look at a fence and know that the dog is contained. I can't look at a front yard with a dachshund or a pit bull knowing with comfort that it's restrained. As far as leashes, 6 feet is pretty restrictive to be out walking a dog. I thought it would be better to loosen it to 10, but I also had our municipal judge look at the ordinance, and the fine is quite substantial, and it does cover all aspects of it. It's kind of towards the back, but maybe we just need to do a little bit better job of enforcing it, especially to repeat violators, and having that done. So I just wanted to know from your input, how many problems have we had in the village? What's your opinion on this? Floor is yours.
Well, in terms of, okay, I'm just going to look at the notes that Brad gave. In terms of enforcement, you know, I think the sheriff's deputies probably follow pretty much the same criteria I do. We look at, I generally give everybody, if I get a complaint about someone's dog, whether it be barking, running at large, whatever. Generally, what I do is I send them a written warning with a copy of the ordinance, so everybody's clear on what the issue is. And then I also put in there, you know, for them to call me with any questions or if they think the information's in error, because not every report, I've had reports, you know, that they don't even have a dog because somebody gave me the wrong address. So, you know, you really got, you know, enforcement involved being fair to make sure that the information I'm getting is accurate. So that's the first step. Then after that, if there's a repeat, then depending on the situation, I can go through a citation, as do the officers. And then within our citation, we have a bond schedule that can go up to the hundreds of dollars, you know, in terms of fines. So as far as, like, how strict it is or how much we can penalize somebody, I mean, the judge, and what I put out on a citation or what the officers do, the judge can either up it or lower it as well if the person wants to say, well, you know, that's way too hard or whatever. There's no go in front of the judge and say, hey, you know, this is the extenuating circumstances, and the judge might agree and bump it down. And so that's kind of how the enforcement works.
Could you tell me how many calls there has been on this issue in, say, the last 6 months?
70 letters, I think. I sent out 70 letters.
Okay.
The complaints that I got.
Of those 70 letters, were there any citations written for a second offense?
I'm probably only on my third or fourth citation.
Okay.
To be honest, I have some actually in my inbox right now. I'm getting ready to write.
Okay.
So, I, you know.
What's your feeling of the underground fences being posted?
Well, there's a couple issues here. I don't have a problem with, there's two things here. I mean, I think it's fine to have a sign that says,
suppose
that they have an electric fence. 151-6, where it talks about adding electric fence to that word, to that paragraph, I don't think we should do it. If what that reads is, and maybe this is a misunderstanding here, but under D it says no person having his possession or under his control any animal that threatens to attack individuals who are passing or present, unless it's restrained by a solid fence. And it talked about adding electronic fence. We specifically had section D put in there to address aggressive dogs, that it is not appropriate to have electronic fence for aggressive dogs. So I don't know exactly why we wanted to add electronic fence to that section. To me, if a dog, right now the way we read is, you can keep your dog on your property any way you want, okay? Verbal training, electronic fence, solid fence, leash, whatever, you know, as long as they stay on your property, that's fine. When we added section 151D, what we said was, you know what, if you have 151-9D, if you have, oh, no, I'm sorry, 151-6D, if you have an aggressive dog, electronic fence isn't enough. That's not enough. If you have a dog that threatens to attack people, and that means that, you know, I go there or I get enough complaints where the dog's running up to the edge of the boundary and is baring his teeth and is growling and barking. Everybody knows an aggressive dog. When you see it coming at you, you know it's an aggressive dog, and it may or may not decide to barrel through the electronic fence, and once it gets through, now all bets are off. So in that situation, electronic fence is not appropriate. You're going to have a dog that's aggressive or that territorial for whatever reason. We don't want them to only be restrained by electronic fence. So
So for dogs that do obey, it is okay to have an electronic fence?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Okay.
I guess, you know, one of the concerns that I would have on that, and it reverts back to the fence issue, is I know of two homes that are on my regular route that I walk that the fences aren't sufficient to contain the dog. If the dog wants to jump over it, it certainly could, and they are threatening dogs. In fact, one owner, I said, can he jump over that fence? The owner looked at me and said, yeah, probably.
Well,
so
again,
I understand it's a kind of an unrelated issue, but maybe there's...
Well, but our Section D, we said, unless restrained by a solid fence sufficient to contain the animal.
So that covers it. Yeah. All right.
But I'll be honest with you, though, people need to report it. I mean, you know, I get calls all the time sometimes, you know, and people will call me about a dog that they bit another dog, and the first thing they'll say is, this has been going on for 2 years. And I said, did anybody call?
Don't wait.
No. So it's really obviously the police or myself. We don't have a crystal ball, and people feel they hesitate. They want to be a good neighbor, but it really becomes a safety issue. Nobody's gonna lose their dog. Nobody's gonna be fined hundreds of dollars the first time somebody reports it. I'm gonna ask talk to the dog owner. I'm gonna go see what the dog's like. And code enforcement is about giving people a chance to comply and take care of the issue before they're ever penalized in any way. At least that's the way I was taught to code enforcement. That's the way to end up the DC, they took the course.
Yeah. I would agree. Yeah. So,
yeah. So I guess if I had one thing that I'm concerned about is I think people wait too long to report an issue. They wait before, they wait too long, and then until it is, until something happens. Okay. So that's my biggest concern, that people feel like they don't want anybody to get in trouble. And I guess I would say people aren't in trouble the first time they're aware of an issue. Try to address it appropriately and hopefully give them some resources to correct the issue. Nobody has a dog that, I would say 99.9% of our public don't have dogs. They don't want their dog to attack somebody or bite somebody or bite another dog. Matter of fact, a lot of owners, when it happens, are very surprised that, I couldn't believe my dog did that. Well, they're just dogs. They're all capable of it. So.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for sharing.
Do we know the address on Libel? There was one lady that got so scared on Libel, but she ended up running into traffic.
Yeah, there was an individual that was walking down Libel Street, called me personally, was walking down Libel Street and was chased. Panicked enough to be chased into traffic, moving traffic on Libel Street, called it in, and it was just a warning to the homeowner. The same individual was walking by the homeowner's home a week or two later, and was addressed by the homeowner asking, "Why did you call the police on me?" Yeah. So I mean, I think there's got to be some. That's why people don't report it, because...
I never give out names.
Yeah.
Huh? I never give out names of who reports it.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes people figure it out.
Yeah.
But I tell people, I'm not going to give your name out. The only time I give out a name is if I issue a citation, then I say to the person first, do you want to go, are you willing to be a witness? Because, then they'll know it's you. If they say no, then I say, well, okay, the next time this happens, then you got to call right away, call the police department, whatever, so you get over there right away so the officer can witness the offense. Because otherwise, you can only write a citation if you have a witness. If I'm not there to see it, or if an officer can see it himself. That's why barking is really hard, because by the time an officer gets there, or
he's not barking, it's your word against theirs. It's, yeah. So, I get it. It's tough. Like you said, you have 70 cases right now.
I 70 letters. I've issued 70 letters.
Okay.
Situations where I've addressed,
Okay.
That's just a rough estimate. I have some pending right now that I got to write citations.
Okay.
The easiest situation is when dogs are picked up and we take them to the shelter and then the owner claims it. Well, now it's kind of pretty obvious. You had to go to the shelter and claim your dog. That's cut and dry.
Yeah.
And I've got several citations that I've written on that, and those are pretty basically slam dunk, because obviously dog Lucy with the pet little shelter plane.
Yeah, we didn't go into your yard and get it.
So. We didn't come to your yard and kidnap your dog and take your shelter.
Couldn't, the fence was too high.
But I can tell you that this whole electronic fence thing is not just, you know, in the Village Valley. In my other municipalities, we also put in paragraphs like this because, you know, we've had people, the dog comes charging out, nobody even knows if there's any kind of fence there, and even if there is electronic fence, and they think maybe there is, but they don't know, is the dog really going to stop this time?
It's intimidating.
We had an elderly person almost slip and fall in the Village of Howard as well, and I was trying to get out, and that's why we put this paragraph in there. But I do need people to report it, and I couldn't go there, and when the dog comes charging out, I can say, look, your electronic fence isn't appropriate for your dog's temperament. That's what this all comes down to.
Okay. All right.
Is there any way to, I don't know what other municipalities do, but like some people put the electronic fence right up to the lot line. Is there any way we can keep it a few feet back so at least there's kind of a buffer zone?
That's kind of a right-of-way issue that is probably code enforcement concern. Yeah, it's not supposed to be in the right-of-way. That would be...
Yeah, but there's some places the right-of-way goes right up to the sidewalk, or the property goes right up to the sidewalk.
That would be a question and a public works question, I guess. Yeah, it's not supposed to be in the right-of-way at all.
Right, no, but I'm talking about the places where the lot line goes right up to the sidewalk, and we do have some of those.
Webster's a perfect example.
And it's on busy streets.
Well,
so that's the...
And I would agree with you, but I will also say that even the underground fence that I have, you can program it to a certain number of feet to the outside on both sides, they're pretty directional. Yeah. Mine will go up to 12 feet on either side. That I can retain the dog. He got shocked once, so I don't use it anymore. So he stays in the backyard and underneath a 6-foot fence.
But again, people report a dog that makes somebody feel frightened when they're walking by, an electronic fence is not an appropriate fence.
So they just blatantly need.
They shouldn't even use that type of fence.
Okay.
And if you look at all the other, you know, the electronic fencing, you know, most of the companies will say right out not to be used with an aggressive dog. They don't want to assume the liability either. If you have a dog that gets stressed and upset and aroused when somebody walks by on the sidewalk, then you need a different... Number one, your dog shouldn't be out there because you're teaching it to be aggressive. It's getting aroused and stressed, and you're teaching it to get aggravated every time somebody goes by. You know, that's why mailmen and deliverymen and people get bit so much, because they're coming and going, and every time the dog comes, they're harassing it. Well, you know, not on purpose, but that's what they're doing. When the dog finally gets a chance to grab them, you grab them. And a lot of dogs, you know, the dog that works on the electronic fence, the dog that just kind of stands there and, oh, someone's walking by, woof, woof, and they sit there and they kind of wag their tail, you give you a treat, and they're not all upset and, you know, going crazy because someone's walking within 5 feet of their yard.
Okay.
Okay, and there are dogs that are that way.
So it doesn't matter what it is. If it's coming at somebody, period, electronic fence, they need a physical barrier.
That's what I would say.
End of story.
That's what I would say, yeah. But again, people do need to report it because obviously I don't.
Okay.
New to this, I have some questions, and there's a lot of subjectivity built into this. It scared me. Well, are you easily scared? Is the fence high? You know, how aggressive a dog is too aggressive for. When you write us on citation, does that automatically kick to the alleyway judge before a fine is assessed, or just on your say-so is a fine assessed?
When I issue citations, same with any of the officers, a person, it's like any other summons, traffic ticket, whatever, the person can either contest it, they can pay the fine outright, or they can contest it, plead not guilty, in which case they talk to their village attorney, and so then they do their thing, sometimes they plead bargain or whatever, or they can request a trial if they don't come to it, you know.
Yeah. So the default really is they have an appeal. Or
absolutely. I'm just the person, you know, we're not the judge and jury at all. We're just saying to the judge, you know, we think we got enough evidence that this person did this violation. Then it's up. Then if the person wants to argue it, you know, the judge can take both sides of what there's a whole system in the court.
And in practice, you mentioned a dog that turns up at a shelter. Do you get one free one, or?
I probably would give them a warning the first time.
Yeah.
Unless I'd already given them a letter.
Yeah. Okay.
The only time I would say I don't give them a warning is if their dog, caused damage, and now there's vet bills involved or medical bills involved, where their dog actually, like, bit somebody, and now there's... And even then, if they step up and say, oh, my God, I can't believe my dog did this here, let me write a check for all your vet bills, let me cover your medical expenses, and even then I might give them a warning. So some of that is based on whether how much, they're willing to discourse with the person that was injured.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate their subjectivity in any code enforcement, but there are so many dogs
I try to consistently give people a chance to comply with the law before I move on to the citation stage. And I assume the officers probably do that too.
Yeah,
they
try to work with people.
Yeah. Unless what happened was like a serious situation where someone was injured or whatever, and that, sometimes might, forego the warning. As far as the aggressiveness with a dog, that's whether or not this fence could be used. That's not really a violation as much as it is, okay, your dog is too aggressive for a fence. That would be something I'd probably document in a letter and document with my judgment as a main officer. And then, if they continue to use the fence and they got a ticket for that, then I guess they could come to court and say, well, my dog is okay with the fence. But before I would tell somebody that, look, your dog's not appropriate for an electronic fence, I'd probably have video of the dog charging at somebody on the street, me, with its, teeth bared, and the owner trying to get it back and not being able to.
And in your case, going over the years or the village, there's evidence that with certain breeds of dogs or certain size of dogs, that the electronic fence just sometimes doesn't work.
I would say breed and size has nothing to do with it.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Temperament.
Okay.
Breed. I don't go by breed and size. Other than the fact that a Chihuahua, I guess, is pretty hard to intimidate somebody. But I'll tell you what. I had a Chihuahua that was running out and biting people in the ankles. And when I went to the house, that little bugger, he opened the door and he clamped onto my steel toe boot. And I looked at him and I said, if this was a 90-pound German Shepherd, would you tolerate this behavior? And the guy kind of was like, no, I guess not. So, even little dogs, if they bite you, it kind of hurts.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, a lot of people, little chihuahua come champing off, they kind of let it go. But pretty much, treat everybody.
All right, I'm doing something there, but you do have a track record, or that there's a pretty good evidence that these electronic fences aren't fail-safe.
I think they're great. A lot of people love them to death. I think they're great for the dogs that have the temperament to keep their mind, because it's based on training. It's based on the dog thinking, okay, there's the buzzer, because they usually give them a signal. And it's based on that the dog remembers, okay, there's my warning. If I keep going, I'm going to get a shock, or I'm going to get disciplined. It's based on the dog being able to keep its composure enough to remember that training and not run through. I've had dogs that they remember as long as they're not all hyped up and they see a deer. If they see a deer, all bets are off, charge right through it. Well, then that's probably not the best fence because there's deer everywhere.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Trustee Atwood, you're talking signage, you're not talking about somebody. You're just little... Small in each corner.
You see them posted. You see them. Gold Rusk will have one out there that says, property protected by Gold Rusk underground fencing.
Yeah. I think that, we've got a lot of new people moving into our neighborhood, and you see a dog loose, and if it's a dog that a Chihuahua I maybe wouldn't get excited about, but if it's a boxer or some kind of, and I saw it running loose, that's an advantage to me to see that they have the fence things in. Maybe even when you're driving down the street and out of your corner of your eye, because we've got a dog on our block that chases cars, and I know that they've got the fence, so I never swerve away or anything. But then maybe that'd be a positive. Or I think that'd be a positive.
I mean, I don't have any problem with that. So long as people understand that just because they have that doesn't mean their dog. I still want to keep our paragraph that says, look.
I would agree.
An aggressive dog, you can't have that.
Yeah,
but it's
I
nice
definitely
to
agree.
To see the sign, because most people will call me and say, "Wow, they got electronic fence, but I think the dog's gonna come through." Then I can go and kind of. See
and then you can go check it out.
Okay, so maybe we can look into adding signs to the ordinance just so people know.
Perfect. Thank you.
Maybe that section number C.
Okay. Thank you very much, Monica.
Oh yeah. Thank you.
Let's move on to item number 16, Wisconsin Department of Transportation traffic counters. We have a new director of public works. His name's Guy Lynn now.
Oops. And nobody caught that. Nobody caught that.
The last village board meeting, a number of trustees had noticed traffic counters placed on Libel Street, and they had asked why, and I said, you know, I don't know. And the next day, I got a hold of the DOT, and they had informed me that traffic counters were being placed all over the city of, or all over the Green Bay area, to collect traffic data and to update the information that they have. And they do that on a yearly basis. So the counters that you'd seen on Libel, and I'd seen them on Webster, they're out there to collect traffic data and to update their information. It can be made available, that information, once it's collected and uploaded. If by request, it can be made available to the village.
Libel and Webster are not state highways, right?
No.
They're not state
no.
highways?
No.
Shouldn't they ask permission?
What's that?
Shouldn't they ask permission to put counters on our streets? Well, Webster's county. Is Libel a county?
No, I don't think so. No, it's Noble Street. But it is, they are, Libel is functionally classified as a collector, and Webster's functionally classified as a principal arterial. So they want to keep track of traffic on those streets, and I'm glad that they do, because we can request information, or we can, I think now they have an interactive map where you can go onto the DOT's website and you can pull up Libel Street and you can pull up that traffic data.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Any questions for Sean on that? Thank you, sir. We'll move on to number 17, Riverside Drive crosswalk at South 172.
At the last village board meeting, Trustee Klenrick had asked or had brought up a non-compliant issue at the intersection. He had indicated that motorists were stopping within the Highway 57, 172 crosswalk, that they were stopping in the crosswalk or beyond it. I ran out to the picture notified the DOT of the issue, because it is a DOT highway, and they took a look at it, and they had indicated that there are proper devices in advance of the crosswalk to encourage motorists to stop before the crosswalk. Those devices include the traffic signals. On this picture, you can see that the traffic signal, Trevor, if you want to go to the next picture. The actual traffic signals in advance of the crosswalk, so that would encourage or get people to stop before the crosswalk, and then there's a stop bar there too. So they think that the measures that are out there now are adequate to get people to stop before the crosswalk. I did ask about signage and said, well, would it help if we were to add some signs, and they'd indicated that signs are not placed at signalized intersections.
So there's, can we problem. Put some enforcement there? Yeah. Can I'm the one that
yep.
brought this
one
up.
One second, please. Okay, we have a... let's continue talking. I'll get you up there. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the issue is that people don't stop at that far left bar. They go up to the next one. You know, because they obviously some want to turn, and some want to, you know, just don't... I don't think they realize what that all is. Unless there's somebody standing there with a bicycle, maybe, or trying to cross. And I think it's easy just to roll up and get ready to go. You know, I would think signage might help, but if they won't or don't, I don't know.
No, I thought signage would help too, but...
stop here, you know.
A stop here sign, right, that would point down the stop bar, but not at a signalized intersection. He had pointed out that there are push button... actuated push buttons at this crossing, so if a pedestrian were to come up to the crossing, they would hit the button and it would actuate the traffic signal
And I think it's more problematic for a person trying to walk a bicycle across or ride a bicycle across, because that far right, you can see the yellow island is still raised, so to get around it, you're really out in traffic if you're going to the right side of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the concern.
I'd ask about the pavement marking. What could we do to the pavement marking out there? Mm-hmm. Thought it looked a little faded. I suggested maybe they get touched up, but they're pretty firm. Mm-hmm. The stance is pretty firm that the devices that need to be out there are.
So there's nothing, I don't know the exact intersection, but I can remember seeing signs that have an arrow pointing down saying stop here on red. That would imply a signal intersection. I'm questioning how you could get that response. And then just in terms of the markings, I don't know if diagonal lines could be placed in the crosswalk area, which would give a stronger indication to someone that they shouldn't be stopping there. It's just sort of like a different color pavement or bricks,
right,
as an as a crosswalk. It helps discourage that sort of activity. I don't know if the painting is an option, but I would definitely challenge them on the stop here on red signage.
I would agree with the diagonal markings at the crosswalk. I can go back to them and question why.
Don't ask, don't get.
Why a sign cannot be placed. You think it would help.
Now we have a request from the floor to suspend the rules. Trustee Genrich, seconded by Trustee Harris. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Come on up, Becky.
Okay. I can tell you exactly what the problem is because I use this when I come. Becky Nyberg, 214 Seminette Street. It's not that the person in the close lane doesn't stop at the cross. It's that when somebody's going to turn left, they pull across and they park right there, and they're looking to make a left turn. And they don't see me sitting there on their bike. And then the light changes, and they haven't made the left turn. And then they look at me, and they go, sorry, because they're right across the crosswalk. And the elongated piece is elevated, and so there's no room for me to go around the front of the car and in there, or room to go around the back of the car, and that piece forces me out into the oncoming traffic with my bike to go around them, or I just have to wait for the next signal to come around. And I get why people are why that happens, and they're all the only ones who aren't apologetic are the ones who are on the phone and never see me, and they don't know that I'm there until I come around with the phone on the front. Tap their hood and they look up from their phone. That's happened twice. But it's that elongated piece is the problem because it pushes me out into oncoming traffic as I pull my bike around. So if they could just put it down so it's flat and maybe just have it marked on the pavement, it would keep me from having to go out around it. I can't jump a curb with my bike and the curb is too high, or just have a raise one that I could ride over, but it just, and I get why that's there too. It's because they want people to turn into the far lane and not turn into the oncoming traffic that's coming off the bridge, but it's the raised median that's beyond it that's the problem.
Becky, how does, if someone's making a left-hand turn onto the on-ramp.
Right. They pull through the crosswalk and they sit there and they look, and then the traffic is coming at them, and then they aren't the kind that waits for the traffic to stop and makes the left turn. They stay there and they wait for the next cycle of light, so they're still sitting there.
I see.
And there was the woman who was sitting there with her phone, and there was nobody coming and she wasn't turning and she was sitting there, and then when the light changed she was sitting there, and then I tapped them. If her window had been open, I would have thrown her phone in the bushes, but I would have grabbed it from her. But it happens probably about 30% of the time that I'm there, that I come through there. But it's the nose cone. Because they park, and I can go around them, but I feel really unsafe going way out in front of them. And sometimes they'll back up if nobody's behind them. They'll be, oh, okay. But usually if there's somebody behind them, they can't back up, and I can't go between the cars and then get between the... And so I just sit and wait for another roll, the intersection. And I get why people do it, but it's just that if they could flatten that nose cone, that would eliminate the problem. They could just, flatten that somehow, but I don't know if that's possible.
I can look into that, but I'd be willing to bet that they're not going to...
Because they want to keep people from turning down from going on up the on or up the off ramp. That's the key.
I think if they were to eliminate this nose, that people would drive over the crosswalk and over the sidewalk right here.
Yeah, and that may happen too. So, and maybe that's keeping from, but it's just, and it's fine. I can just sit and wait through another side of the intersection. And there's one other thing on that intersection is that when you're sitting on that sidewalk, there's a big, huge sign that completely blocks your view of the oncoming traffic. So when you're on your bicycle and you're waiting at that corner, you can't see if there's any cars coming because there's a sign right at your head.
Where? Right here?
Yeah, right there. It's right at the head level of the person on the bicycle, and so you have to go behind it or go... I mean, and that's fine, but you have to look around.
What is that sign indicating?
I'm not sure because it's the back of the sign. It's the sign is facing the traffic. I don't know what the sign says because I can't
stop here.
See it from the
I just wonder if it says stop here. Maybe we can just move it.
It's just a big sign. Yeah, I don't know. So it's in the way. And then you just look around it. I mean, you're not dumb. You're not going to just pull out. But, it's they probably want to look. Oh, my God. But it just makes it hard. And, it's that one right there that is blocking the...
It looks like
this is before... One way.
Yeah, it's emergency
right
stop sign that they flip open when the lights are out.
But it's there. There's something there that you can't see through it when you're on your bike or even walking. You have to go behind it or in front of it and it makes me think that maybe somebody in a car doesn't see me, but my bike is there. But
another thing I noticed, this brush should be cut back.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's reduced some visibility, too.
Yeah. And there's quite a few people that use that intersection. It's really nice to have, but it was just that nose cone. And I get why it's there. I just wanted to ask a question if it could be moved.
Sean, maybe... instead of recommending a solution, asking them to recommend a solution to protect people on bicycles so that they don't go out into traffic. Because if you go out around that nose cone, people are coming off the on-ramp.
Right, yeah. And
so what's their recommendation?
You don't go out around it. You just, and there was one day where I thought I could get between the car and the curb, and I couldn't. Then I had to kind of stop short and kind of lift my bike up because there wasn't quite enough room. But it's, you just wait another cycle, but it'd be nice if it just wasn't there.
After the meeting, Vicki, I'd like to get your phone number, and I'd like the traffic engineer from the DOT to come out there with us and meet with you, and they can see this firsthand.
Yeah, it's not a problem. Okay. Thank you.
To return to the regular order.
Excellent. Great job. I have a second. Trustee Harris.
Okay. To amplify what the DOT's got all kinds of traffic engineers, and this isn't the only intersection where the light sequencing gets people hung up. If there was a left turn arrow right after that, nobody would ever get hung up and block the sidewalk. And how long have we had that stub that goes down that beautiful new trail? Is that about 5 years? Or has it been that long?
2 or 3 years. Yeah.
And the village has money in that, and the state. So we've got this new thing, and that's the design of that intersection is getting in the way of people enjoying that trail. But maybe it's something about how they sequence the turn light, or it can't be the only place in the state like this where cars are getting hung up and blocking the. A trail that we see get more use all the time, and if it's a problem now, it's only going to get worse. Maybe.
I do the same thing from time to time. I'll stop in or I'll pull through it. And I think we just forget to look sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think everybody does it.
Well, and Trustee Sampson said it might be a sequencing thing. Maybe they can leave the turn left arrow. Maybe they could put a turn left arrow at the end of the sequence to allow people to clear. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm going to look at the timing.
Okay. Anything else on that? Thank you, Becky. Thank you, Board. Action item number 18, future agenda items. Is there anything my fellow trustees would like to see on a future agenda? Okay, we don't have any future agendas. We'll move on to number 19. Do I have a motion to convene into closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 19.81 or 85(1)(e), deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, specifically offer to purchase 535 Green Avenue.
I'll Justice. Move to go into closed session.
I second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Yes. I have a couple questions about this procedure, and based on having a citizen come and ask about it. One, is it a simple majority of the people, or do you need some supermajority or a unanimous to go into closed session?
We need a majority.
Simple majority. And then the other question, this is kind of subjective, but we have the ability to judge this on a case-by-case basis.
We do.
It doesn't set a precedent.
We do.
But arguably sets a precedent, but we don't have a policy that if we're going to do one in closed session, we should do them all.
Correct.
We have to do it. Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Roll call, Trustee Harris?
Aye.
Trustee Genrich?
Aye.
Trustee Atwood?
Aye.
President Rafter? Aye. Trustee Dirk?
Aye.
Trustee Green?
Aye.
Trustee Sampson.
This is the one I want to know. I was aye in favor of the motion to close, but no now just to reflect the input from citizens involved.
So you are saying not to move, go into closed session?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, doke. We're in closed session. Thank you very much. For